big wreck at Daytona 500 one of the scariest moments for you personally?
It happened so fast. I didn't have time to get scared. I just smashed into Ryan Newman when he was upside down. But I mean, yeah, it's, if you do this stuff for a long time, man, it's inevitable you're going to get some big ass crashes. And I've had my fair share, unfortunately.
Welcome to Oil and Whiskey, an Ironclad original. I am Josh Henning.
I'm Phil Gerber.
I'm Jeremy Gerber.
Welcome to Oil and Whiskey, an Ironclad original, presented by Blade HQ. Just go to bladehq.com/oilandwhiskey to check out their selection of knives, and then hopefully we'll be showing you some of our new stuff here very shortly. Today's guest is the NASCAR Cup Series driver of the number 7 next-gen Chevy Camaro and host of Stacking Pennies podcast, Corey LaJoy. We're also taking some more of your listener questions later on in the show. Corey LaJoy is a NASCAR Cup Series driver in his fifth year on the circuit with 4 top 10 finishes. He's a third-generation driver. His father, Randy LaJoy, won Xfinity Series Championship in 1996 and 1997. He's also the host of the podcast Stacking Pennies, an official NASCAR podcast. To learn more about Corey, visit his website at CoreyLaJoyRacing.com. You can follow him on Twitter at Corey LaJoy and Instagram at Corey LaJoy. Corey LaJoy, welcome to Oil and Whiskey.
Man, thanks for having me. You caught me in the middle of a mountain bike ride here in Kansas City. I had the day off. We flew up the boys rolling that thing through tech. So I try to throw my mountain bike in the trailer as often as possible to get it in different different terrains. Pretty cool. Yeah, I'm glad I got some cell phone service for you boys. But yeah, Kansas City actually has pretty great cell service, if you were, in case you were wondering.
Nice.
So we'll get right into this deal, man. Third generation, you've been around, you've been in the industry, in the scene for a while, obviously, since I guess you were born. Tell us a little bit about what you remember growing up and the differences, especially as of late with this new next gen car.
Yeah. So as you mentioned, my dad was a 2-time Busch Series champion back in the day. You know, some of my favorite memories growing up were with travel on the road in the motorhome with dad, making memories there, whether it was riding bikes to the racetrack or going, we'd bounce in between races. We go to Niagara Falls and, I mean, Arch. We went all over the country as a family. So that was a lot of the memories I had growing up. Now they got a 2-year-old and a 3-month-old at the house. I'm excited to make those memories with my kids, hopefully for the next foreseeable future. If I don't get fired between, now and the time they can remember some motorhome trips, but it's been good, man. It's been a grind for sure. So keep treading water, and luckily I've found a pretty decent home here at Spire. I'm gonna be back next year, and hopefully we can keep building on it.
Growing up in it, obviously you were around it. Did you know from an early age that this is what I want to fucking do, or were you ready to get out of it, and something brought you back? Where did that go?
No, so yeah, I played baseball through high school along with racing. I was too short and slow and couldn't jump high enough to play basketball. I stopped playing basketball my sophomore year in high school. But I was just enough to kid myself that I could have went decently far in baseball, and I didn't have the passion for it. All I wanted to do was race, and all I wanted to work on was race cars, and I wanted to be at the racetrack all the time. But it wasn't – I mean, I got bit by the racing bug when I was probably 7 years old. I remember the exact spot. I was at Darlington. Dad just raced a Busch Series race. And I was holding my mom's hand, walking through the garage after the race is over, and there's all these cars that are beat up and scuffed from the wall, and they're covered in rubber marks and sandblasted and the whole deal. And I just remember that smell and, just the smell of the burnt rubber and racing fuel and just, like, the calamity and, like, the chaos of the garage after the race. And I was, like, that was, like, when I realized, oh, like, this shit's pretty cool. And kind of stuck with it and got to lucky breaks and started really taking it serious when I was probably 16, 17 years old. And next thing I'm 6 years of this thing and just getting started.
That's wicked. So where does all that start, like, behind the wheel of a go-kart, or where do you start, like, cutting your teeth or
go-karts are probably the easiest to get going for sure, because there's so many there's so many racetracks around, no matter where you are, whether it's dirt tracks or asphalt. And you, after go-karts, that's when the split, the forks start happening with, you know, if you're a Southeast guy, you start going more towards like late model stocks or super late models and racing on, you know, 3/8 to 1/2 mile oval asphalt tracks. And then if you're in the West Coast, there's more sprint car tracks like the Kyle Larson route where you can go dirt track racing and you can go sprint car racing all the way. I mean, you could, I mean, there's guys, you know, that make a, an entire career out of racing sprint cars and make a damn good living doing it. But Larson was able to make the jump there when he was 20 or so. He got picked up by Toyota and obviously the rest is history on his, but I kind of went the asphalt route, just the standard late model stock, Canon. It was Canon East at the time that I did it. And then trucks Xfinity, and try to get a seat at the table on Sunday, man. That's pretty damn hard to get. I've got a pretty good one, so I don't want to get rid of it.
Nice.
Did you ever race a snowball back in the day?
Yeah, I raced it 4 or 5 times. I don't think I've finished one. I feel like I've broken something. We've been running in the top 3 or 4 every single one. That's a badass race for sure. That place bites me every time I go down there, but I'd love to go down there and get a Tom Dawson trophy for sure.
I've never talked to anybody. I mean, I'm not in it like you are, obviously, but I've never talked to anybody that has raced it that has fond memories. I don't know if anybody's ever finished well there. I've tried to tell these guys about it. Tell them a little bit about the Snowball Derby. You've got hundreds of guys trying to race into this thing. And then even when they do, there's still way too many cars for the size of the track that there is.
It makes it interesting.
Well, you obviously haven't talked to anybody that won, because then I'm sure they have some pretty fond memories. You got a trophy on their shelf, but it's the hardest short track race in the country, where, like you said, there's probably legitimately 85 cars. It's on a 1/2 mile track in Pensacola, Florida. And about 25, 30 of them are full-time guys that race there pretty much every week during the summer. So they got their stuff tuned in. And then you've got guys from the West Coast come down. You've got guys from Canada come down. Yeah, I mean, everybody that's got a super late model in the country wants to go win a Snowball Derby. And I've come close. The last time I was there, I burned a clutch up running second. Thought we had our best shot to win there. But, yeah, that's definitely a fun one. So, yeah, I mean, there's places where you're nervous to qualify, you know, one lap, lay it on the line, see, you know, you say you got to put it on the dash. And that's putting your balls on the dash in case you're wondering what you're putting on the dash. Like, there's places on the cup schedule, like Dover, it's a big 1 mile fast concrete track, that'll scare you a bit there. Charlotte, you got to put them on the dash, but like, there's no feeling like qualifying at Pensacola, because they only lock the top 30 in, so you don't want to miss it, and you have to be so perfect. So that's the most nervous I'll get behind the wheel, is qualifying for some other group. So yeah, that's how important it is. But yeah, and then you got your real job on Sundays, which is okay occasionally.
So when did stars start aligning and stuff start really happening as you're coming up and thinking you're fixing to get a shot,
man? It's I don't know if there's a distinct moment where stuff really started clicking, but I do feel like with every passing year that I face less of a headwind to try to get my name out there and build the brand. But I feel like I was signed to a development contract with Victory Petty Motorsports. I don't even know what year it was, 2010 maybe. And with plans to run the Xfinity car a couple of years and then be in the cup car. And they had all my pay notched out for the next 5 years. I thought I had the world by the balls, and they couldn't get any sponsorship drummed up. And that whole development deal kind of fizzled away, and I was left with no driving opportunities. And I started crew chiefing for a guy out in Bakersfield, California, in like the single A division. It's what ARC is now. So I was flying up to Bakersfield, California to set this guy's car up. We'd go race and I'd fly back and forth. And I rubbed shoulders with the guy at Phoenix the last race of the year on pit road. And I had a headset on, I had that little clipboard, you know, I was like Chad Knaus. And Darren Rood was the guy's name. And he owned a collagen company out in Tustin, California. And I met him through the Petty relationship. And we just kept tabs. He was keeping more tabs on me than I was of him. And he's like, man, what are you doing with a headset on? I'm like, paying bills, man. Just trying to stay at the racetrack, trying to, you know, keep building the network. And he's like, come over, see me and the wife, Patty, tomorrow. Had a big hospitality set up over there off turn three at the racetrack. So we raced that night. Then I went over there in the morning and hung out with him. And Darren was like, man, we've been watching you on social media. We love how you represent yourself. And, you know, you're a Christian guy aligned with our brand, our company, and you're in shape guy. It's, you know, it's kind of what we're trying to push. And we want to get help you get back behind the wheel of a race car. And, you know, we want to, you know, what's a $500,000 going to do for you? I'm like, enough to get the ball back rolling. So it wasn't for Darren and Patty Rude and that sponsorship to kind of get me back behind the wheel. I took that to an Xfinity team, kind of a middle tier Xfinity team, just to get some laps and get on some tracks I hadn't been to yet. And then that kind of got the ball rolling. I parlayed that to a couple more sponsors. And then I was a squeaky wheel enough with Ron Devine at BK Racing to put me in the car for just the Daytona 500 on the stipulation that if we didn't make the 500, we weren't going to race any more races. So we made the 500, and that was when we started rolling. That was 2016, 6 years ago. And, you know, we keep grinding, man. It ain't done yet.
So when all that got started and they scout you out, they see you with your headset on, did the hair have any bearing on landing that gig? Like they said, you're a good Christian guy. Guys fit. They're like,
look at that head of hair.
I feel like it had, dude. I mean,
yeah, no, I didn't have the hair back then. I just had short.
Shit. All right.
Yeah, the hair was post COVID.
Okay.
The hair was post COVID, but now it's like the brand, man. That's how people recognize me.
Yep.
It's like,
yeah, for sure.
Down, throw it out.
We got a sales guy.
So I got to go keep head it to head. I'm stuck with it.
We got a sales guy. I might have to go head to head with you. Josh claims you got a better head of hair on him. But
Corey's got a way better head.
Yeah,
of
Phil
head.
Smunt's got a beautiful salad, but that's it's nothing.
No LaJoy.
Yeah,
I think we're just going to refer to it as LaJoy from now on.
Some guy tried to name it something this past week. Some fan at Darlington. He was like the LaJoy flow or the LaFlow or something like that. He tried to get creative. I'm like, nah, man, just call it what it is. Flow. Don't church it up.
Well. I am from Alabama. I, of course, being from the South, grew up a NASCAR fan. All my family, you know, we watched it growing up. And then there was a time probably over the last, I'd say, 6, 7, 8 years that just kind of wasn't for me, man. I grew away from it. And everything I think NASCAR was doing just wasn't enticing to me. And I haven't watched a race in a long time. But this year, with the new car, I said, I'm going to watch the first race and see what's going on with this new car. And I know there's still all types of controversy about it. And if you like it or hate it, I have watched every single race this season, and I'm back a fan, man. I'm hooked. Like, I'm into it.
Let's go. Love that. Now, why is that?
I just think that it's more, I mean, we're into cars. Obviously, that's what we do for a living. It's the new car is more what we know. You know, the old car was just so old and so antiquated, everything about it. I know there was technology in it, but the suspension design specifically and the way the car was done was not, I mean, we were building stuff way, way more advanced than that, specifically with the IRS and the sequential, you know, and the larger wheels and the center locks, everything was just, I don't know. We could relate to it more for what we do for a living, you know?
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, I like the next gen car. I mean, it seems like it's very favorable to the fan base, and anything new, no matter what it is, whether it's better or worse, is going to get some sort of reaction by the fan base. A lot of them are not going to like it because they don't like change, but I think it opens the doors for a lot of different things, especially with technology. To, you know, there's still some trinkets teams are doing to these things, and they can add on to make them kind of their own, but I think parity's good, and, you know, now the devil's in the details more so than ever. Just, you know, a couple thousands here, a little bit lower CG there, you know, 1 or 2 horsepower, a little bit of diffuser shim, trying to get some more downforce. And man, it's like if you were off on 2 or 3 areas of, you know, a couple tenths of right front camber or, you know, right rear toe, man, you're like, your day could be really long. So that's why I think for us as a smaller team, we we didn't start the year as good as we wanted to. We had some good runs here and there, but you know, we were a little behind with understanding how small that window was to hit, and we didn't really have a lot of tire data and stuff to pull from, or really understanding on the best baseline setup to set them up as. So we're starting to hone in on now. We're getting a little more help from Chevy, starting to do some more simulator work, which is new to us. And we're going to start building our own database. And I think we're going to be, we had a lot of speed last week at Darlington, and I think we'll be pretty good here at Kansas as well. So
that's simulator work.
It's a long grind, man.
I keep seeing everybody, I mean, online and, you know, in the, obviously I've been watching the new Race for the Championship. I watched the first episode. I haven't seen the second one yet, but I think that's going to be, I think that's going to do for NASCAR as a whole what the one on Netflix did for F1. I think so.
I don't know if it's going to have quite the impact, because I feel like Netflix, well, F1 in particular, had a lot of fertile soil here in the United States, being an international sport, right? It's just like people don't know how cool motorsports is one. And I also don't look at F1 as a competitor. And that's the peak of motorsports engineering. And I really put some, you know, a lot of credit to those F1 guys. Tough job, a lot of pressure. And that is really, truly trying to get your ass to be in 100% in tune with that car and not leave an ounce of speed in the racetrack. So really appreciate that. But I don't know if that race for the championship show on USA is going to have
the thing they did, though. With the F1, the thing that, at least for me and everybody that I talked to, that it sold the characters and the personalities. Where before, that was behind an iron curtain. You had no idea. This was all, you don't, unless you were in the sport, you didn't know who those guys were. And the same goes for NASCAR as well. Unless you're in it, you don't know exactly the characters and the drivers. And it becomes one of those things where you have, if you've never watched a race and you watch this documentary or docuseries, then you have to watch a race and you kind of start seeing, you visualize that guy in your head and what they are and the life that they're living and the family part of it and stuff like that. I think you're cutting it short. I think it's going to do better than you think.
It'll certainly be good. I mean, we were in the second episode, my family and I, and they followed Spire around. So I encourage you guys to watch it. Cause I thought it was pretty good. And there's a lot of great storylines this year, even on, you know, none of that was scripted, but, man, you couldn't even script it a better season this year if you wanted to, with off season, free agency stuff, Kyle Busch with 16 different winners, and obviously not a good thing, but Kurt Busch getting hurt, Ty Gibbs filling in there. I mean, there's a ton of stuff to that we didn't expect over the course of the year. And I think it's gonna be wild again this playoffs, man. It's gonna be a lot of shakeup for sure.
I've been telling these guys about the new car and how much I like it and the way that the racing has been going. And I'm sure they'll find a way to fuck it up down the line. But right now it's really pretty cool. And the thing I like the most is I don't want to see y'all have to beat and bang on each other, but I like the fact that if it happens, the car's not done. You know what I'm saying? Especially on your super speedway stuff, the cars are more resilient. The cars definitely can take way more of a beating than before, you know? But I'm also seeing stuff as of late where guys are saying they're getting hurt more in these cars. What's the difference there from the outside looking in? I'm obviously, we're car guys. Safety standpoint, why do you think guys are getting a little bit more hurt, but the car is that much more resilient? Is it just transferring the shock through, or what?
So without getting too far in the weeds with it, the car is over 200%. Better in the areas of like T-bone crashes and upside down crashes with halo bar deformation. We have crash bumpers. So more or less the car doesn't have as much give to it. So with the previous car, you'd have the nose way out there, and then you'd have a couple pipes kind of just holding the couple of roll bars, just holding the bumper in place just for an aero advantage. Now every car is built, every bar in the car is built with a purpose. Also, the cars are about 250 pounds heavier this year than they were last year. Certainly, if you know, it just has more kinetic energy when it hits the fence. But it's got a little bit less crush, like initial crush. So, a spike to your G load's pretty, like, you know, 8 to 12 milliseconds quicker than what it was previously. But in Kurt's case, it wasn't so much that one hit that did him in. It was the seven or eight consecutive ones over the course of 14 weeks that really did it. And the one at Pocono was just the one that broke the camel's back. So, it's unfortunate, you know, and it doesn't look very good for him in terms of recovery or getting back anytime soon. So we'll be thinking about him, but, you know, there's also element danger with this stuff too. It's like, you got to have your headrest up, dialed in. You got to have all your stuff as good as you can do it. And you also have to take care of your own body. You got to take fish oils. You got to train your neck. You've got to do all the stuff, that, you know, helps you be less prone to a concussion, and keep your brain inflammation down, because, man, it can happen to anybody, and I want to be prepared. That's why I'm sitting here riding, you know, 16 miles in the woods.
Well, they were doing all that back in the 70s and 80s. Really, they were doing that in the 70s and 80s too, right?
Yeah, they were drinking,
taking their beer,
smoking cigarettes,
eating fish oil, drinking fish oils. Yeah. I'm sure 79, yeah. You know, NASCAR, they were big on health.
Where were we?
I think they were. Yeah, big elk guys for sure. Yeah, Marlboros and Budweiser. That was their concussion prevention.
Where were we on the road tour? We went toward that.
We went to Roush Fenway.
Yeah, Roush Fenway. Yeah, so they walked us through there, and, man, seeing, like, just the gym, the workout facility, and listening to what, I mean, I don't have to tell you, you do it, but it blew my mind that it's that physical, like the amount of training that goes into that. But I mean, I know I've been in, you know, fast cars, been on a track, been on a motorcycle, you know, and it's, I don't think people give guys in motorsports enough credit for the physical aspect of it, you know,
especially on some of those long races. I mean, hell, y'all had, what, a 500 mile one last week, right? I mean,
the other 500, man, went 4 hours and 10 minutes.
Shit.
It was a long,
yeah,
long
it
time.
Was that one's brutal. That one's long. Well, there's the Coke 602 at Charlotte, but the Southern 500, because lap time's a little bit slower there. That's the longest one. I mean, it's, and Darlington, you don't have a break. I mean, you have to be locked in. You're running this close to the wall for, you know, every other corner for 367 laps. It takes every ounce of concentration you have.
So what's more draining on that, the physical aspect of it or the mental aspect? If you're focusing to stay off that wall for all those laps.
So there's tracks where, you know, Daytona, Talladega, there's really no physical exertion. I mean, your heart rate gets up because you're just waiting to hit something really hard, really fast. But that's a mental exhaustion for sure. I mean, you're trying to play chess. You're trying to gauge how fast guys are, which cars are pulling the lines well, which manufacturers are working together, what time. So you're always watching. You're always trying to, like, plan for 10 laps, you know, from where you're at currently. So Daytona, Talladega, now Atlanta is also like a mental fatigue race. But you go like a Martinsville, you go to a Darlington, you go to a Bristol where there's a lot of vertical G load and you're really hauling ass. Those are more of like the elbows up, and you're pretty wore out after those for sure.
Was the big wreck at Daytona 500 one of the scariest moments for you personally?
It happened so fast. I didn't have time to get scared. I just smashed into Ryan Newman when he was upside down. But I mean, yeah, it's, if you do this stuff for a long time, man, it's inevitable you're going to get some big ass crashes. And I've had my fair share, unfortunately.
Looking back about, you know, all those years we joked about, you know, guys in the 70s and 80s and, you know, how much different they did things, but NASCAR as a whole, and then the race teams as well. I mean, what's some things that stick out that you would have, nobody would have ever believed? Say you go back in time and you tell your dad, like, hey, this is the shit we're doing with these cars now, you know, and what's going into it.
Every week I tell him something. He's like, no way. I'm like, yeah. Yeah. And that, you know, that was only that was 96, 7, 8 when he was, you know, 2000. So, I mean, anything technical on the car right now is different than what we even did last year. You know, this new car is so much different, so much more precise. But the stuff they were doing there with coil bind rear springs and pigtail front springs and bump stops and using the front sway bars, a torsion bar, like, I mean, there was, it got crazy. And I kind of applaud NASCAR for going the direction of the next gen car, because the amount their teams were spending in R&D just didn't justify the cost on the backside. So one thing I'd probably, you know, tell the guys in the past, and that I think the way that drivers race each other is probably the biggest way. Like, there's no give and take at the beginning of the race. It's just, if there's a spot, man, you take it and you try to hold on to it, because it's so hard to pass. You know, it wasn't 8-10 years ago, like, you wouldn't race anybody until, you know, the last run of the race. You just get there and log laps and wave at each other and, you know, see y'all at the bus lot type thing. Now people can give two shits. Like, nobody's hanging out with each other. Nobody's wives are very chummy. It's just like, you get in there and get yours and go home.
Is the horsepower that even now with this new car?
So I heard somebody at NASCAR say that they're always talking about doing like a development freeze, right? So like whatever push rods, whatever rocker arms, whatever valve spring combination, crankshaft combination you have right now, it's locked in for the next 3 years, right? Or something like that. Just to save teams money in terms of not having to cover the overhead of development. So I heard somebody at NASCAR say, if you would saran wrap all the motors up right now, you couldn't get the motors have more parity. So, you know, there's some engines probably have a little more bottom end torque. Some OEMs probably have a little bit more top end speed that might favor better over a speedway versus a short track, something like that. But I think that they've got them pretty close right now.
Is the new car and everything being completely different open up a lot of room for interpretation on the rules and areas you can find?
I mean, they
probably get it locked.
They've hammered a couple people that have been, you know, toeing the gray area more so than they ever have this year. So I like it. I mean, that was the whole premise, man. It's like, we're going to build this car. We're going to get fender parts. If you fuck with it, like, we are going to smack your hand. And they've fined people, you know, 3-digit points and over $100,000 just for messing with different parts. It might not have been a competitive advantage. So
was it Hamlin's win they pulled for the packing tape under the wrap? Was it Hamlin?
I heard there was more than that, but
okay.
I will say this. They didn't do it because it was worse. It's not like they forgot to, you know, to pull the tag off their jeans before they wore them out to, you know, Carrabba's that night. You know? Like, it was on there for a reason.
Yeah.
Shit. So when you're on the track, are there like, and you don't have to name names, but are there like some notorious just like asshole drivers where you're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah.
Here's this motherfucker.
Everybody. No, it's like, that's just what it is, man. And I'm sure people say the same about me. Like, there's no gentleman's agreement right now. I mean, it is, you have to go get every spot at any given time. Like, and there might be a couple of guys you'll cut a break to, and you kind of have like, you know, that like, all right, I'll get you back and we won't hold each other up just in the context of the race. But when the pay window's open, man, like, everybody's a dickhead, which I appreciate. I mean, hey,
cutthroat.
At least you know, right.
So what's the move? Yeah. Like, if everybody's out there and you're hammering on, everybody's going for the win, what's the jab? Or like, somebody's just to fuck with somebody. Somebody does something stupid. What's the like insider trick? That's now, it? You just go like that?
Like whenever you pass them, like, yeah. If like somebody was really a dickhead to you, yeah, and like held you up a couple laps and like he was just on your door or mirror driving you and blocking your air, and you get around him, you just give him one of those. Like, that's so like demoralizing. That. You know, it's just like, thanks. No, like that, you know, that's pretty straightforward.
Yeah,
like that,
right.
It's like,
thanks. I appreciate it.
You know, like, thanks.
That's just a subtle gesture, but it carries a lot of weight, I guess.
It's kind of like the old finger out the window when you'd win a drag race.
Yeah. Well, I mean, there's like, some guys will give you that one, but like when somebody gives me, like when I'm really racing somebody and like, you're like, and they get you and you're like, damn it. And then they give you one of those and you're like, fuck. Okay. I see. I got you.
Insult to injury.
I like that.
Uh-huh.
Well, I know you were sick of talking about this one in particular and the Quaker State 400.
Teed it up nicely.
So
let's talk about it again.
Well, what I wanted to ask was, this much time has passed since then. I was jumping up and down. I mean, I was rooting for you. I was like, holy hell, this is going to be awesome. I love to see anybody get their first win. It's just it's a great atmosphere that you can kind of share in with them. But after that much time's gone, and I'm sure relived it in your head. Did you learn anything? And at the end of the day, I don't think you could have done anything different. But I would like to know did you learn anything when you're in that position again?
For sure. I mean, there's a lot of stuff I learned there that I applied at Daytona a couple weeks ago there. I thought we were playing that race pretty good as well. I got caught up in a wreck there, running sixth or seventh, but I thought we had a really good car to compete for a win. But, you know, I've been saying about that race, it's like, there's nothing I would do different, but I would do it different next time, if that makes sense. Like, with the way the context was, I was getting pushed by the 43, and he had me kind of sideways, so I wasn't able to put the wheel to it to get to his left rear quarter, which was the move. But he kind of pushed me to the outside of him, and then he was able to block it. Just didn't work out.
Go back. You need to go back and watch that one. It was pretty intense. So, you know, shifting a little bit away from the NASCAR specifically, but the podcast deal. How'd that start? We're interested in that more, you know, just because
we stumbled into this one.
Yeah, because we're really bad at this one too. So we're gonna try to pick up some pointers.
Don't take any pointers from me. They have to edit a lot of the stuff I say on that podcast out for post. But I started doing it on MRN, which was Motor Racing Network, and it was called Sunday Money, and it was just a couple buddies of mine just BS and talking about social media and talking about current events and really talking about racing a little bit. And that kind of allowed me to test the waters and figure out what the hot topics were not to talk about, you know, just to kind of navigate the game a bit. And then NASCAR bought MRN when they brought everything in privately, and they bought ISC out. They looked at the numbers, and they were trying to build their digital content platform, and they're like, man, this show's got some pretty good numbers here. Like, would you be interested in doing another show, doing your own show? I'm like, sure. So then I got my buddy of mine, Ryan Flores, who changes front tires for Ryan Blaney. Him and I are best buds. We kind of see racing the same way. And then we got Chuck Bush and Jonathan Merriman both work for NASCAR. So they kind of see it as like the company man, viewpoint. But Ryan and I can kind of call for what it is. And we have some pretty good candid conversations. Then the plus part, even more about it, is that since NASCAR owns it, man, they can get all the good guests. They can get previous winners, they can get Hall of Famers, so it's not me doing the asking to get the guests. It's, you know, it's NASCAR brass, you know, texting Chase Elliott to have him jump on the podcast, or, you know, Mike Kelton or Kyle Petty or Mark Martin, or, you know, like all the people that have been gracious enough to jump on the podcast. It's really gained some good traction. The fans love it. So I'm gonna keep on showing up and doing it. And I'm starting to have some fun with it and starting to figure out.
You said when it started, it was called Sunday Money. That didn't have anything to do with Earnhardt's boat, did it?
Oh, of course it did. I mean, everybody dreams of spending a night on Sunday Money.
Yeah, that's what it's called, Sunday Money.
I like that.
You should see. Look up some old pictures of him on that boat too. And he had his beer. He had his beer shorts on. He'd wear these swimming shorts that had these two pockets in them, with a beer in each pocket.
And you guys are asking me all these racing questions. I'm trying to ask y'all some whiskey questions. What are the go-tos?
And I think anything in the Weller collection, if you can get your hands on it. Weller 12, bang for the buck, man. That's right there at the top.
Really? Love that.
That old elk stuff. I've
been on an Angels Envy rye kick in Rumcast. That's what I've been...
Okay.
Tipping on lately.
Yeah, the rye's loaded up with flavor. And then when you soak them in a rum barrel.
Double sure.
Yeah.
I haven't tried that particular one. Need to get on that.
Yeah, they're good. We got a bunch of Angel Ends. I just picked some.
What's your favorite flavor of oil? You ever sip on any of those?
Man, if we did, I don't remember because I was probably drinking a shit ton of whiskey before I got to that.
That's usually level. Just a finger.
I mean, I've accidentally tasted plenty, you know.
You're always something on the ground to see what's leaking.
I'm not going anywhere near fucking gear lube. That's for sure, man. Fuck gear lube.
No, brake fluid.
Yeah. What's funny is every time you taste it, you always say it's antifreeze, and no matter what it is, tell that that's antifreeze. Sure. What do you do?
Antifreeze is kind of sweet.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah.
Sweetness.
Good mixer.
Yeah, you get like if you get something that's been running pretty rich, you know, or something pushing past the rings, and you got some oils and some gas soaked oil, you know.
Yeah.
What do you do in the spare time besides riding your mountain bike and stay healthy? Are you into cars or what's your hobbies?
Yeah, I love cars, man. I love I'm building a 1970 Barracuda at the moment with a Hellcat, so I've got it all in there. Trying to figure out how to connect the dots, put an aftermarket drop all the K frame out of it, rear end stuff out of it. I got, put a triangulated four link 315s in the back. They're about that wide.
Nice.
Those e-body, I didn't have to tub it out. The e-bodies have a pretty big wheel well up in there. So put some pretty cool wheels on it, coil over front and rear. So I've been tinkering with that for about a year, a little bit over a year. That should hopefully get done by the end of the year. And I love just building stuff, man, whether it's cars. Well, I got one of those drift trikes that was a big craze a couple years ago. I built one of those that rips it pretty good. But beyond that, just hanging out with my kids, man. So I got my two-year-old's a lot of fun right now. And helping out the wife with the three-month-old because, you know, racing takes up – you know, I'm gone 3 days out of the week, maybe 4 days out of the week. So I got to try to I don't get to go. I might peel off an afternoon a week to ride a mountain bike or, you know, work out six in the morning while everybody else is sleeping. But beyond that, I try to do my work at the shop, get that done, get simulator prep done, and then try to spend as much time at home as I can.
Does the two-year-old know that old enough now that knows that daddy's a race car driver? Is that,
that
registered? That's got to be cool. I always thought like being a hot rod builder, yeah, my kid's a gearhead, and I always thought that was like pretty damn cool, right? But that's the next level, race car driver over hot rod builder. Yeah,
probably that song.
Astronaut would be the top.
I got hit with some nostalgia this past week. I was sitting there at the cup shop, and, you know, a lot of memories I had growing up was just going to the shop with dad and, you know, seeing how he, you know, mingled with his guys and talk a little shit and pick on them and encourage them and, you know, all those types of things. And there was a diecast car of my dad's in the shop for some reason, in my cup shop. And, of course, my son found it. It was in a box. So he yanks it out of the box, and he was sitting there pushing that little diecast car of my dad's in my shop. You know, all my cars are around, and it was just like a blast from the past. Like, oh man, that's pretty cool that, you know, I was a two-year-old, you know, walking around with my dad in his shop. Now it's pretty cool to share that experience with him. And, you know, he definitely knows which car is mine. And, you know, he's excited to go to the racetrack and all that. So it's starting to get pretty fun.
That's awesome. And I think you'll realize as he starts getting a little older that all your fans that you have out there, there is nothing cooler than your son being your fan. You know, when you have your kids that are your fans, it's like, we've got some cars and stuff that we've built that pop up in video games. And like, I'll get like a text or a phone call. My son's, he's 11 now, so he's old enough that he'll text. And that's just, dude, so cool. The awards, everything, like, man, that's the best.
Yeah. That's what I'm excited about, man. It's pretty cool now, but, you know, he can tell you what he wants, and he can kind of make broken sentences. But, you know, when he starts, you know, being 7, 8, 9, if I'm still able to be doing this thing, I'm sure we'll be having a lot of fun with coming to the track.
Hell yeah.
You got him into Power Wheels yet?
And he rips on a bike. He's got one of them Strider bikes he kicks on, and he's not scared to send it off a big ramp or something. And he just started doing a pedal bike. But if it comes to like motorized or electric stuff, he doesn't like He only needs self-propelled vehicles at the moment. He doesn't like something when it starts taking off yet. So we'll see if he can get settled into that.
Talk about the simulators just a little bit. I've been wanting to ask if it's, because you see it more and more, especially as of late. It's part of the repetition. I mean, you got to get your reps in. All these drivers are really leaning on these simulators. Is it that good of a simulation? I mean, is it that close?
It could be if you put the work in, but I think every team has their own data set of what they validate tires, how much stock they put into it, and what areas they want to work on. You know, for example, you know, we went to Watkins Glen was the first weekend we went to the simulator, and you know, with the way our practice schedule is now, whatever four shocks and springs you show up to the racetrack with, you're married to all weekend. You can't change the spring rate. You can't change. You can change some shock adjustments, but you can change sway bar. You can switch like the sway bar arms or like blades, yeah. So you can full stiff, full soft, right? But whatever four springs you show up to the racetrack with is what you're married to. So we work for probably 4 or 5 hours in the simulator just to figure out what the right spring combination there was, how stiff you can be, whether you want to go real soft, you want to go 400s in the back, to try to get forward drive, whether you want to go 800s, 900s in the back to try to keep the platform flat and keep it switching directions crisp. But, you know, so you can put a lot of stock into pitch and roll and how much feedback the simulator's giving you. And actually it'll relate to speed pretty well too. So we found legitimately half a second on the simulator in just keeping the pitch right of the car and figuring out if we wanted to sacrifice mechanical grip for aero platform. And then we go to Darlington last week and we spent 4 or 5 hours on that again. And I think we legitimately found 2.5 to 3 tenths from what we unloaded with and just tweaking on sway bar timing and shock settings. And, you know, you've got to be smart enough as an engineer and as a driver, not go too far down the rabbit hole and chasing something that's not going to translate. But, you know, 2.5 tenths at Darlington, man, is the difference between, I mean, we ran in the top 15 all day versus running 28th, 30th. And we ran 32nd, 4 or 5 laps down in the spring. So it was just 4 hours in a simulator made that big of a difference for us.
Damn.
And then we go back the following week. Like we went back this week and we went and we essentially validated the tire model. So we wanted to raise and lower track grip to make the lap times comparable to what they were in the race and get the tire balance or the tire models to drive what my feedback, like we'll put our sit up in and then we'll tailor the model to what my feedback during the race was. And then we just try to build our own data set.
That's cool.
I didn't realize it would be, you could pick up that or it would translate to real. That's crazy. What's your favorite track of the year? Your favorite race of the year?
Man, I tell you, Kansas used to be my least favorite track, but it's starting to get worn out and you can rip the fence pretty well. I've had some good cars here. So Kansas is, definitely made a big shift in my ranking, but I love going to Bristol. It's got a special place in my heart. I love going to Darlington, Martinsville, Daytona special too. So, you know, there's my handful that I have circled that I always look forward to going to.
NASCAR is coming to Chicago. Was it next year or the year after?
Yeah, street course. July 4th weekend, man. It'd be wild. Where are you guys out of?
North of Chicago.
Yeah, nowhere near the city. Man, you guys are going to have to bulletproof those cars. It's going to be ballistic glass. Dude,
no doubt.
I'm excited.
I'd love to have you all out that weekend.
Yeah, we'd love to, awesome. Man. That'd be awesome.
Yeah, it'd be great.
There you go. You're invited. Put
Thanks,
it on the
man.
Calendar.
Yeah, that's recorded. That is.
Yeah, you can't back
for,
out.
That's forever.
I'd love to. Hey, I'd love to have you all out.
Oh, thanks, dude. We'd love to.
It's going to be like the, you know. Yeah, come over and swim anytime you want.
we're
here to swim. We've got our towels and
who?
Yeah. What? Well, I didn't mean today.
Yeah, I was being nice. I really didn't feel like you showing up.
Where is it running in Chicago? Is it like Lakeshore Drive down.
I think it's part of Lakeshore. Yeah. I mean, they're doing a whole Grand Prix.
They're going to fix the fucking streets and everything out there.
I would assume so.
Dude.
I mean, they got a race on. But they're building a whole pavilion and everything. It's a big fucking deal. Yeah.
That's going to be cool.
I don't know. I'm showing up.
That'd be awesome. Says here, your NASCAR profile says that your favorite movie is Days of Thunder. So we get a lot of favorite movies.
Isn't that a big cliche? I don't know who wrote that.
Okay.
I mean, it's true. But I feel like I could put Remember the Titans or something a little less stereotypical on there. Well, but yes, Days of Thunder is a classic.
So Days of Thunder versus Talladega Nights. What are you watching? Hey,
obviously, that's like whether you want to drink, whiskey or tequila. So it's whatever you're feeling. Sometimes you want to get a little crazy and black out drunk and forget what you're doing. And sometimes you want to sip whiskey with the boys. And if I want to sip whiskey with the boys, I'm watching Days of Thunder. If I want to get a little wild and have some laughs, I'll drink tequila.
Nice. Yeah. I like that.
That's a good one. I gotta watch it again. It's been years.
Dude, I fucking love Talladega Nights.
I watch Days of Thunder more than I watch Talladega Nights.
When I think it came out, I was like 14 or 15. I'm trying to do the grind and make it as a Cup Series driver. And I thought that all those guys were rock stars. And I thought, it's just like red carpets and, rock stars and models and the whole deal. And it came out, I saw it in theaters. And I'm like, these sons of bitches. Like, they think that we're a bunch of morons. And then now, hey, anytime that thing comes on TV, I'm like, hey, honey, come on. Get on the couch and watch it. I think it is hilarious.
Dude, the little kid Walker in Texas Ranger. The little kids. Yeah. Oh, man, it kills me.
This is your chance to do a plug. What would you like to tell your audience or fan base about?
You got to have some sponsors. Come on, the sponsor plug. Bam.
Well, I mean, I don't want to do the whole sponsor plug, but, I've
sure
got a lot of
great. I sure do love Fig Newtons.
I sure do love Fig Newtons. It is convenient. But, I think that, watch the show this weekend, Race for the Championship. It gives you a good insight on the challenges of being a small team in Aspire. I encourage people to go listen to the podcast. We have a lot of fun on there. And it gives a kind of a peek into just life on the road a bit and what it's like. And we have some great guests. It's cool that you've got this type of platform, kind of long-winded conversations to where you can really get somebody's personality come out and really, gravitate to it. And you can pick your favorite guys because there's, tape on pretty much everybody out there. If you want to go do some research on somebody, you can see how they are and who they what they're into. So, social media is great. Podcasts are good. And you guys got a good one. So
thanks,
I encourage y'all keep it up.
Appreciate it, dude.
Appreciate it. One of these days we'll figure out how to do it.
Yeah, we'll just keep drinking.
You got an awesome studio set up.
Appreciate it. It works.
Is that in y'all's hot rod shop or what is it?
Yep.
Yeah, it's upstairs in our showroom.
Was our conference room. Yeah. We didn't have that many conferences, so we decided to do a makeover.
We're only 40 minutes from the city, so when you come up, if you're going to have some time, you need to come up and check the shop out for the race, then we'll go down and watch you race.
Yeah, if you got time, jump in some hot rods. Man, we got a lot of cool pro touring muscle cars. Like that. You could stare at them, pick up some ideas for the CUDA.
Maybe the CUDA will be done by then, and I'll throw it up in the hall or drive it up there.
Yeah, sure. Cool. Yeah, we're sitting right beneath us right now is a 70 CUDA twin turbo Hemi, 6-speed on a chassis. Dude, it's wicked.
Hell yeah. Race.
Well, now we get to some of the standard questions that we ask every single guest.
And then we'll let you bomb down that hill on your mountain
bike. After it.
Now I'm nice and cold. I'm going to fucking hit a rock and go endo here.
that's gonna fall on us.
Yeah. You're gonna get some lawsuits in the mail here in just a couple weeks. Don't worry.
Just don't use the front brake going downhill. You'll be all right.
No. Dude, there's been a lot of rocky terrain here. There's been some pretty gnarly drops, but it's been upright so far, so knock on wood here.
Hell yeah.
What is first up is what was your first car and a story about that car?
Oh, yes. A 2001 Pontiac Bonneville supercharged. Had a TV in the roof, Mario Kart. Way to get girls, man. Every chick thinks they're good at Mario Kart. So you sandbag the first one, you make some wagers on the second, third races, and it's a wrap.
Oh man, dude, that's some of the best advice I've heard in a long time. Really we asked the question about advice, you know, on this show. That's
advice,
that
bro.
That is it.
What's
Wave Runner and Mario Kart with a two cassettes you jam down in that thing.
He said Wave Runner. All I could think of was the supercharged Bonneville pulling a Wave Runner. I just think Kenny Powers is all I was thinking about.
Hell yeah.
Next up, if you weren't a NASCAR driver, what would you have done?
I didn't really have a whole lot of backup plans. I mean, I went down the path of being a crew chief just to pay bills. And, you know, everything I've done, I've kind of been all in on. So I'd have probably been a crew chief and probably been on the box of Cup Series car, Cup Series team in some form or fashion. I love leading people. I love trying to get the most out of them. You know, I don't think the way the teams and engineering set up now, I don't think you need necessarily an engineering degree to be the guy. I think you hire some really smart engineer that went somewhere and to be your lead engineer, and then you just kind of lead the people and try to get the most out of them. So I probably could have done that. I couldn't go back and do it now because I've missed out a lot of learning opportunities, but that's probably what I would have done if the drive and stuff wouldn't have got kicked back off 7-8 years ago.
Sweet.
Best piece of advice you've ever received?
I've gotten a lot of great advice, but something that's been sticking in my head recently, and I even forgot, I think I just heard it like in passing, was nothing's ever as good as it seems or as bad as it seems. And that's so true, because you know, you do TV and you think you suck and it's never as bad as it seems, or you had this big moment, people are celebrating, patting you on the back. It's never as good as it seems. It's always just life, man. It just keeps on rolling, good, bad, or indifferent.
You keep yourself in the middle.
Yeah.
And last but not least, everybody's favorite. This will be interesting since you're out on your ride. But what's in your pocket right now? It's time to do a pocket dump.
Nothing.
Not a thing.
Yeah, I'm bare. Now, usually it's a penny or two, because people just make it a point now to give me pennies, because that's kind of my deal, Stacking Pennies podcast and all that. So normally I have some sort of penny in my pocket. My wallet, usually a Sharpie as well. At the racetrack, try to keep a black Sharpie or a gold Sharpie, just so you don't have to keep passing Sharpies back and forth, COVID. And, you know, obviously my cell phone. Don't go anywhere without that.
Sweet, man. Well, Corey, it's been awesome.
It's been fun.
Glad you could come on, and hope we can stay in touch. Anything you ever need on that car, if you're up this way, come check us out, and we're gonna take you up on that Chicago race next year for sure.
For sure.
Oh, hey, I would love to have you guys for sure. Get that on the book. Make sure you reach out to Stallings or whoever.
Yep.
To line that up, and I'd love to come check y'all's shop out too. The same way.
Love to have you.
Sounds good, man. I appreciate it.
Thanks, dude.
Have a good ride. Guys. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. Good luck this weekend.
Give him hell.
Y'all have a good weekend.
You too.
Remember, you can learn more about Corey by checking out his website at CoreyLajoreRacing.com. Check out Stacking Pennies wherever you get your podcasts. It's time for the Glove Box, where we tell you about some of the cool new gear, guns, EDC shit, whiskey, and other stuff we're into. All right, guys, what do we have this week?
Start it off, Josh. We usually come this way, and Phil's got the same knife.
No, I brought a different one.
Oh, he's got something different.
But I forgot to look up and see what the name was. So I
got. And then you've got some sort of like assault rifle one of those things with those high-capacity magazines.
Clipazines.
Clipazines with a clip in it.
2 million bullets per second.
Today is, I'm still rocking this Launch 11 Kershaw. And I'll tell you, I really like it.
You've had a chance to hit some corners in that thing now, huh?
Yep. Yeah,
you're digging it.
It's a good size. It's got good action. I like the blade. It's light. It seems like it's holding up to some fairly decent abuse for the price point. I mean, it's a damn good knife. There's nothing really bad I can say about it.
Yeah, it's funny. You busted this out when we were sitting there talking to Kyle yesterday, mm-hmm. and he wanted to.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Shit on it, I guess mm-hmm. I'd say. But as soon as you put that in his hands, he's like, holy shit. And that is, yeah. They are surprising. Yeah. I love this new line of Kershaw's. I got burnt out on the whole onion thing. You know, I had the Ken onion. Yeah. I had the mini chive way back in the day.
This is your first knife.
Yeah, it's like my first knife. But these, that's good. It's got just a little bit of that Tanto kind of shape going on it.
Check out the launch series from Kershaw on Blade HQ. And the only other thing I have is I've got a cool new shirt. I've got a cool new shirt from Vinny's Hot Rods.
And it has an eagle on it.
Yep. It's got an eagle on it.
What kind of sound do you think that eagle
makes? So you know it's fucking badass.
Oh, the same sound all eagles make. Just like that.
I was waiting for it.
Yeah, Phil knew it was.
And he's my buddy. He gave me a shirt, and so I wore it. And that's the thing for my glove. See, this is the back of it. It's got a back.
Oh, look at that.
Vinny builds some badass stuff, man.
Vinny does.
And an awesome dude. Awesome dude to hang out with, man. Vinny cracks me up. Vinny still, to this day, has probably my funniest story that I've ever heard. Can we tell that?
Best line ever, yeah.
I'm sure we can tell it. If he's listening right now, he knows exactly what it is.
Yeah, it's so good.
So, Vinny and I have been buddies for a long time. We were traveling somewhere. We stopped at a truck. This was years and years ago. Stopped at a truck stop. Walked in. Like, oh, shit, look, they've got Mexican blankets, you know? And this was way back when it was kind of like, it was rare to see, you know? So, it's like, oh, they got Mexican blankets. So he looks and he looks at me. And he's like, what do you mean? Like, look, they got Mexican blankets there. You know, maybe, you know, we're building hot rods. We're doing stuff like that. He's like,
put that on like the interior, seat. Right?
He's like, yeah. He's like, they're just blankets. And so Vinny is Mexican. So to him, they're just regular blankets.
It's just like so simple. Like, so I just thought it's hilarious.
Like, we're not going to go down and get an American cheeseburger, are we? It's like a cheeseburger. Blankets.
Good stuff.
Something we bring up all the time. Now, next up, what do you have, Jeremy?
No, Josh. I mentioned earlier that I've transitioned into the going out blades. So I got something pretty special here tonight, boys. Check this sucker out. That's a piece of jewelry right there. So that is a William Henry.
Kind of a big deal.
Yeah, Damascus. It's got like a sweet little ruby for the safety release and something that's kind of a showpiece. Not something you generally would carry. You're certainly not cutting any boxes with that sucker.
Zip ties?
Definitely not cutting zip ties, but just something kind of cool to look at and appreciate the craftsmanship. It's probably my fanciest.
Is it sturdy?
Yeah, check it at the wall.
It'd stick when you throw
probably it? My fanciest blade. It's my second favorite knife because number one in my collection is the knife that you guys built for me and Phil, which we reviewed, which is fucking awesome. But this is it's some jewelry, man.
I didn't know you had that.
Oh, yeah. I've had it for a long time.
Yeah, you've been keeping this one a sleeper.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a cool, it feels cool. Everything's like sharp. Very detailed, super cool, like tight tolerances.
Jonathan Ward had a William Henry too. He did. When he was on there.
Yeah, which I've also got. You know, my daily carry.
You doing dual knives?
No, in the other pocket is that's the William. That's a William Henry Damascus money clip too.
Damascus.
And it's got the same kind of deal that he plants that little kind of ruby deal in there.
Layer of detail.
So, yeah, it's like a layer of detail. And what else we got? Just the keys. The old dad wallet. The dad wallet is growing, man. Sucker just keeps growing. Top view on that guy.
Good. You need a wide angle camera.
Look at that. I think you stuffed that prior to coming on here.
Dude, that's fake.
Yeah.
This thing just keeps on growing.
It's a bunch of those fake credit cards that come in the wallets when you buy them.
So
it dropped like 2 inches. Went right over.
Dude, you've got to get off that.
I know.
I'm telling you, I sit.
I know. So, yeah. That's what I got, man. Pretty proud of that knife. I like that one.
It's a great knife. Damn, that thing's sexy.
Trust you with that.
What do you have, Phil?
I brought out a old school. This is the first automatic knife that I got. Benchmade CLA.
Got some yank to it.
It has some yank to it. This is one like when before anybody had automatic knives here, and everyone I gave it to who wanted to try it would thing, and then it would just take off and be banging off of everything, bouncing around the ground. But yeah, you got to hold on. It's almost a two-hand operation.
Maybe for a boy like you, but
yeah. I just like it. It's got this little lock. So this is my fidget spinner all day long.
You like the lock, huh?
I just fuck with it. I
got you.
I'm not worried about going off.
One of the ones I had the other day that had a lock on it, and it was always the wrong way.
Yeah, it always is. But careful, careful.
I don't think it can get away. It bangs, but I don't think it can get away from you.
You don't think?
Yeah. There's been like five or six people who've launched that across the blade. Shop floor.
You've had this, it looks pretty, like, I mean, the blade's pretty fresh. You obviously haven't abused it.
I carried that probably for a solid year and a half, and then it's been sitting but in it's my got desk the, drawer.
Yeah, when they're like that phenolic material, they just last.
They don't wear, yeah.
Good blade.
But yeah, a little on the big side.
Oh, that's a good size. Yeah.
That's the perfect size. Yeah, that's for fighting. Yeah. You know?
That's combat a knife. Anything smaller than that, grizzly bear is going to kick your ass. This is perfect size for
yeah. Luckily, I haven't come across too many grizzlies yet.
Dude, I kept
you
thinking,
never know though.
I mean, next time you do and you don't have this knife,
I'm sorry. As the whole time we were doing that podcast, all I could think is like a fucking mountain lion coming up, mauling them behind them and just like, clawing. It just looked like the perfect setting. Not that I wish bad things,
but it would have been cool.
Corey LaJoy gets attacked
on the Oil and Whiskey podcast
by a mountain.
By a saber, like a saber-toothed tiger. Are they dead? They're extinct. Yeah. Right, by a mountain lion.
An owl.
We're done.
Yeah. Owl. And that was it. What else you have?
That's it.
Well.
Standard wallet, cell phone.
Well, what are we drinking? You know what?
Bourbon whiskey.
You know what?
What, Josh?
While you're doing...
What are you going to do?
Hey, you got to be here for this.
I'm not going anywhere. I was going to get some Stillhouse and do some shots.
Not a bad idea. I think the Stillhouse would put a hurting on this, like, distinguished Knob Creek 12. I can tell you that. Good. Sure, that's a fact.
Yep.
So, yeah, Knob Creek 12. I think you first discovered this. You would let me know that the 12-year release, so you let her rip.
Yeah, saw it on, I think, Breaking Bourbon, and it had some good reviews. And then first something to do on a Saturday, Sunday, went out doing a little bit of bourbon hunting, and a couple places had just sold out of it. And then I finally found a bottle. And I think we touched on it earlier, cracked it, tried it. And yeah, it wasn't all that great.
Yeah. Yeah, it's not nothing. There's nothing bad about it. It just, for a 12-year and something that you've, like, you chased, it just doesn't hit.
Yeah.
Like
Thrill
it
the
should.
Hunt was better than the deal.
Yeah. So if you find, seek it out. Like I said, Thrill of the Hunt. It's rare. Find it. Welcome back.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Everybody
stop. Josh is here.
Yeah, we weren't talking over here. But
got better the second time. I don't know. Adjusted palate tastes a little bit better now, but I'm going to go good, not great.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. 100 proof.
It's 100 proof?
Yeah, 100 proof. Yeah. A little bit of a burn. A little bit of a throat burn. Don't get a mouth burn, but it kicks you in the chest a little bit.
100 proof. Real big.
I put
there
that
the bottle.
Right dead in the middle as just a fine.
Yeah. I'll tell you
drinking
what. Here's what I would do. I would keep that on hand, and I would make an impressive old-fashioned with it.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Because it's good. It's a step up, like, from just... like a well bourbon, right. You know, something that's just.
I usually do old fashions at bars with Knob Creek. It's got a little different flavor to it, so you can taste it more in the drink.
So that's.
It'd be perfect.
Yeah, Knob we just Creek, figured it out. That's it, man. That is your ultimate old fashioned
like
bourbon right there.
I like that.
And it's got enough proof that it'll make the cocktail
it'll
a little. Yeah, a little pour us alcohol just a little forward.
And what are we going to rank this Stillhouse? I mean, the Knob Creek 12.
I'm going to go a 6-0.
You really did not like it.
Are we pouring this? It's a combination. Are we shooting this, or is this, or are we sipping this?
No, we can sip on it. Right. We can do whatever you want to. Knob Creek 12 year.
6-0, huh?
Phil.
That low?
6.
I don't know. I don't see low. The problem I have is that I don't remember.
It's not that low.
I don't really remember what I did 30 minutes ago, let alone what we rated.
Josh can write that down for you, follow you around, let you know what you did. Get the bourbon, Rick.
Yeah. Snag it. I mean, I think this would be a prime opportunity, though, before we all rate this. We'll have just a little bit less left in our glass. Take a sip. This is about a $100 bottle of whiskey, isn't it? If you find it.
No, it's like 69.
Yeah.
It's like 60, that's what 70. I said. Yeah. So it's just exactly what I said.
Around.
Yeah. Yeah,
right, around. So 70 bucks.
Yeah. 60, 70 bucks.
And then there's tax. And then, you know, the transportation, you know, with gas prices nowadays.
Yeah. Do it as much.
Okay. Yeah. So $70.
Right. Jeremy was right on it. Okay. It's going to cost what he said.
Take a sip of that. Take a sip of that Knob Creek 12. That's an aged 12 year bourbon. Roll it around the mouth, you know, feel it.
The one thing I'll tell you
now,
it doesn't taste like 12 year.
No. Now grab that Stillhouse Black Bourbon, which you poured for us in these cool little solo, mini solo cups.
Wrong. Got a handle on it.
I'm pretty sure that's to hang on the outside of your glass. At least that's what I think it's for. Stillhouse is way smoother.
Significantly smoother.
Yeah.
If you placed the two of those in front of me and told me, what do you want to drink all night? I'm drinking the Stillhouse Black.
That's huge.
Easy, easy decision.
What's your number?
Let me look at what we had, because I'm going to try to compare that.
You got a smooth Ambler, was a 6 average rating. Bell and Mead Reserve was a 5.
Okay.
Yeah. Thomas S. Moore, which is a $100 bottle, that was a 6.8.
6.25.
I was going right there with you.
I was low at 6, but 6.
Once you said it, I remember where our sevens were.
Phil, you set the fucking pace. That was a good review. Solid review. I just had to like be a little bit different.
All right. It's time for us to take some of your listener questions. If you have questions that you want answered or read on the show, send them our way on Instagram at Roadster Shop or at Oil and Whiskey Podcast on Instagram. At Instagram.com. Where it's at. On the Instagram. First up. Who would you like?
The chair.
Hit the chair.
Yeah, and it didn't do it again. That's funny.
Yep.
Who the worst. Who would you like to come in the studio and turn the tables and interview y'all? You guys. Who would you like to come in here and interview?
To interview us. I don't know that I have said person, but I think it would be cool to have somebody who's kind of new to the industry that maybe just open their doors. New hot rod shop guy, somebody getting started. I think that'd be a fun time to let them fire away and ask some questions. But beyond that, I can't think of anybody that... Because nobody really gives a fuck to interview me, I guess, other than that. What do you got?
Good answer.
The first person that popped in my head for no real
Waylon
reason.
Waylon Jennings is dead, dude.
No, Dave Portnoy.
Oh,
just because I think it would be a fucking cool, fun time. That's just who popped in my head.
Yo, Zach Galifianakis in a Between Two Ferns.
I just was watching the movie last night.
It's pretty good. It could be funny.
Funny dude.
Yeah.
I love shredding people as he starts walking or starts talking to him.
This is a unique ability to do that.
Have you always been this ugly, or is that just...
Will you guys ever make a CJ/YJ frame? Chassis? Question mark.
Man, if you'd buy one, that's honestly been the biggest like head scratcher for me. I'm shocked, and I don't know why. I mean, I have some suspicions as to why it is, but there's just been absolutely zero demand for it. I mean, I like them. I think like CJ5, when done right, you know, they're cool. The new, you know, the Wranglers, the Rubicons, the YJs. They're like, that's got to be the most widely modified vehicle in existence. Like,
the following on the new Jeeps is huge, but the old Jeeps, you would think that would have sparked a massive follow-up, but it's just
people
not
are
there.
Into them. They just,
yeah, they're into them.
They're either they're like hardcore right. off-road yeah. rock crawlers, or they're like just a stock-ish restoration.
I struggle, and I'd like to hear like some people's feedback on this. What's the difference between them and the Bronco? Like, why is the Bronco, the early Bronco, so widely popular, but yet the early CJs are, there's really not a place for them.
The size is kind of tough. Aren't they a pain in the ass to get in and out of? The fens was super small.
Yeah, the CJ5, I mean, a 7 is fine. It's certainly, yeah, it's definitely not
hard
white.
Top.
I don't know. Look at all the Broncos, man. They're 95% soft tops or no tops.
Maybe it's because of the way they look.
You think so?
One looks better.
I guess. Could be.
Interesting take on it.
So, yeah, I'd love to build one. I've looked at it. It's a pretty straightforward frame or complete chassis to build. But I think we're just waiting for...
We can. If anybody wants to buy
one. Waiting for somebody
one,
that wants one.
We'll build you one.
So, yes, we offer it. Buy it. We'll build it.
Yep. Next one up. I didn't pre-read these. This one's a weird one, it looks like. Do you guys want some smoked brisket, pulled pork, and jalapeno sausages on the house? From @crafted.q. So I guess somebody's reaching out and want to know if they could bring us by some barbecue and some meat. That's easy.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Bring it.
Absolutely. Yeah. Very easy.
Yep.
We sure would.
Shop full of guys that love barbecue.
Yeah,
100%. Down, we'll set up a lunch and give you guys a shout out.
Yeah. Love to try some jalapeno sausages.
Yeah.
And brisket. You're a sausage guy. I'm not a big fan.
You don't like sausage?
Never had like the smoked sausage or the barbecue. Always stay away from it, like a pork or
I love sausage.
Brisket.
Sausage. Thing about sausages, it's good.
Yeah.
That's the reason I like it.
Was it inspired by the Freddy Got Fingered movie at all?
Yeah. Would you like some sausage?
No, not at all. How much time per episode do you have in each podcast? Setup, editing, etc.
Anywhere from like, you know. So to give you an example, right? Like today, for example, we're thrashing out in the shop. We got two cars that are leaving. I'm actually just
hearing one of them fired up.
Hearing it fire up to leave. So 5 minutes before the podcast, I'm out there.
I know it's hard to believe.
And then we're running up here. So and even this, polished. Yeah, right. It's super polished. But even this one, I felt bad, dude, because I'm looking down and I'm texting a little bit because we got two cars leaving. So we got some loose ends to tie up. And I mean, we don't spend 2 hours typically is what we throw towards it. But usually today's an exception. We got started a little early. Usually it is after the work day.
Yep.
We are done, closed up, and we pop up here. Knock it out. But Ironclad, I mean, I don't know what they do.
They spend a lot of time.
It probably
we
takes
are
a lot of time.
Quite a bit with the Ironclad guys doing the heavy lifting in the back.
Takes a lot of time for them to make us like sound remotely
but they,
decent.
You're right, because we come in the very last minute. We do as best as we possibly can. Once we get in here, we're focused.
Eye of the tiger.
Yeah,
it's
we're
fun,
ready to go.
But to be honest, like this isn't something that nobody's spending hours of research. The guests are interesting people, right? So if you've got to go out of your way to like research and educate yourself on the guests, then it's probably not somebody that's really worth talking to, in my opinion. Yeah. So I think it's pretty cool. We've got some very colorful people, very accomplished people that come on the podcast, and we can walk right off the shop floor.
I don't think you're telling anybody. That things
walk
that they don't know.
Here.
No
like they,
shit.
Like, you think they? You think that's what 100%. They? Oh, I thought they thought we like. Really? I figured they thought this was like Corey LaJoy, for example. Like we probably went to several NASCAR races. We've researched it.
No, I think it was.
It came across
pretty obvious.
Yeah.
We didn't.
All right. Let's just edit all that fucking out then.
No, we don't. I mean, I think that's. We generally record for 2 to 3 hours. And it's generally after hours. Ironclad probably has
countless hours.
Yeah,
700 hours per episode.
Absolute ridiculous amount of hours to put it in to make us look even remotely like we do.
Yeah. That's why it's important to have a good editing team. Handle it all in post.
Yeah. Post is
that what they say? It sounds legit.
Post is the thing. Yeah. That's after. It's also a route in football. You run a post.
It's also used in fences.
Post up.
Oh, sports reference.
Yep. You do guy. Like a right.
We got, I need a buzzer. Every time there's a correct sports yeah. reference, and an incorrect sports.
Da-da-da.
Yeah, that's ooh, a, yep. that would be a great right. one.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck yeah. I got to get.
Ooh, what sport do you post up in?
That's a b-ball. I know that. Basketball.
Ah, all right.
The ball of baskets. Basketball.
What's a commonly referred to as?
What's a triple-double in basketball?
Triple-double. That's not basketball.
It sure is.
Is it?
Okay. Three doubles.
I thought I was going to say ice hockey.
But then who calls it ice hockey?
Sports. I love this one. We got to do this more.
I know things. I know a lot of shit.
I know you do. How do you guys create a... Let's see. Hold on. I already did that. Who would win a... We get this one all the time. Who would win a fist fight between the brothers?
I think everybody knows here that I would reign victorious over both of you fuckers. Everybody knows that I'd dominate.
No.
Hand-to-hand combat? Yeah.
No.
Should we do it right now?
No,
on air?
I'm just telling you no.
I would defeat you.
Josh has been practicing getting his ass beat by a 15-year-old for a while.
Yeah. Y'all are about the same size.
Yeah, and he whoops your ass, so it would be the same scenario.
He doesn't. Stop.
It just, you know what? That. You know what? It's not important because me and Phil we just love each other so much and get along so well that it will never come to fisticuffs. But if it does, you better believe I'm whooping that fucking ass.
No, the problem is.
I think it'll be like back in the day. What are you got going on over there?
It's a chair.
It is not the chair. Make it do it again. Dude, come on, do it again.
You know you can never do that. You know it never works.
Do it again.
It never works.
It's twice. I can't hold it together. You can't expect me to be like, yeah, okay, just power.
Tell
through.
Me you don't remember that.
That's
no,
the
school.
Worst in school. You slide yeah, you your drag, chair, makes noise, yeah, you and you're there for like 20 minutes.
Trying somehow to, you drag promise, you drag the desk back in high school, and it would be like, you're like, oh, what? How the fuck? And then you try to do it again when the hot
oh,
chick,
yeah, right.
when the hot chick in front of you looks back, and it's yeah. just like,
yeah. Oh wow!
I mean, the
even,
only time
even worse when it's recorded on a podcast.
Yeah, the only fist fight we ever had, Phil took a shot at me, and I just ducked it like this. Hit me in the head, broke his hand. He's got soft hands.
I don't think there is a clear winner. This is how I see it going down. Phil is methodical and cunning, right?
Okay.
You refuse to go down.
Okay.
This goes on for
I think it's
way
like,
longer.
Like 12 rounds?
Way, way longer than it should.
I don't have the endurance to go 12 rounds. Like my cardio game is not there.
I think that it's a hide around the corner, catches you with a 2x4 right to the face. You refuse to go down.
I absorb it, you think? Yeah.
This is a long, drawn-out fight.
I'd have him by the forehead. He'd be like underneath swinging at me. That was way back in the day.
I mean, just
so it's a draw.
Yeah, it's a draw. For now, it's a draw.
It's going to go to the judges.
Right.
What's the weirdest vehicle you have been asked to customize?
It's easy.
Super easy.
Your lobster car?
Mm-hmm.
It's up there.
There's nothing. What beats it?
What else beats that?
Every time we're on Kindig's TV show or that episode airs, the amount of questions that we get.
Yeah, but at least those are legitimate cars that just want to be customized in a way. They didn't want to be crustacean-like.
I mean, true.
A LeBaron rear-wheel drive with a big block.
That came from him.
That's actually a pretty cool car.
It sounds like it. I don't think anything beats the lobster.
No. Was that a...
It was a 39 40. Or 41 grand.
Yeah, so this was a car. I don't think it's on the website. but
it's 100% not.
The customer purchased it, and he's in the seafood business. We bought it at a Meekum auction, and it is a, I'm just going to call it a 1940 because I think it's in or around 1940 Hollywood Graham. So as far as I know, I don't know a lot about him, but it was like a big four-door kind of luxury car. I don't know if they made them in two doors. At any rate, this thing was converted to a
two-door Carson top, or is it an actual
convertible? It had a folding top. So somebody did some, there's some fabrication work in this thing. I'll bet you if you Google it, I promise you if you Google it, you'll find the car. So big 40s style fenders, and it was all red. So yeah, that's the car. Yeah. Bam. There it is. Okay. I think it's time. It's been many moons.
This is one of Jared's passion projects that he really got behind. This really
was. So we had built a few cars for the customer, and in the seafood business was looking for something for a trade show display. And purchased the car. So we didn't build the car, modify the car, do really anything to create the car. It was a, somebody did it. I mean, honestly, it was probably done in the 90s. It was a pretty good job. Granted, it's not maybe like greatest looking thing, but it came in and it was already red, and it legitimately looked like a fucking lobster, like already. So that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to turn it into a lobster car. So we took it to a dude who's an airbrush artist and just cut him loose. That we brought it out to Pennsylvania. So Billy Steele had a buddy that did it. I forget the dude's name. And I think those are Forge Line wheels.
They are.
Too. Yeah. Forge Line did us up some wheels. Dave Voss, Voss Upholstery, whipped up some like very aquatic kind of themed. It was like shark skin or something interior. So yeah, that is definitely the most unusual car. Not only were we asked to do it, but we actually did it. But yeah, I think honestly, like when you look at the finished product, like it accomplished exactly what it needed to.
Oh yeah, it looks like a lobster. That's what the guy wanted.
Yeah.
Mission accomplished. Would you consider doing a shop walk around as a special segment on the pod? If that's something somebody wants to see, we absolutely would.
I think so.
GoPros and do a quick shop tour.
Mm-hmm. I could get behind that.
Be great. We could do one at the end of the day, a little walkthrough. Yes, would be the answer. For entry-level builders, what's your best advice when starting a new shop business for yourself? We talked about this, been asked this several times.
Build something to show off your skill set and get your name out there, and you're probably going to have to eat a whole bunch of labor and run all around the country showing it off to get notification. Doesn't come easy. You got to bust ass and
cool,
work for it.
Cool logo. Don't do it. T-shirts. Don't do it. Business card, don't do it. Name doesn't do it. The only business card that you have in this industry is what you've built, and you say, I did this. And then you take it and show as many people as you possibly can and say, I did this. And know when you're driving out to that show that what you're pulling is the absolute best that you can do at that point. If it's not the best that you can do at that point, don't go anywhere yet. Keep until it is the best.
Chris Gray used to have a saying pretty regularly, show me what you've done, don't tell me what you're going to do.
Yeah.
He'd bring that up regularly. And
specifically in this business, yeah. I mean, especially with customers, I mean, you can't just say, promise you it's going to be awesome. You got to have a body of work, and that is your business card. Your body of work is your business card.
That's all good stuff. I think, you know, the thing I would add to that, that I don't think you see a tremendous amount of this with new guys getting into the industry, is, you know, maybe don't think about like just building, I'm just going to be a hot rod shop and I'm going to build a whole car. I'm going to build cars, right? If you look at what's out there, okay, like upholstery shops, like Jeremy Carlson at Avant-Garde, dude, kills it, right, in upholstery shops. He's not building cars, painting cars. Find something that's very, like, specific, a specific task that's involved in building the car itself. You know, years ago, there was the Bent Fab dude who was doing just, like,
tubing.
Phenomenal tubing and plumbing work. I think that's the thing that's probably, in my opinion, is missing in the industry, is guys that are just, like, kick ass at something. That's, don't try to be good at everything, because chances are, like, the guy who's super good at metal shaping isn't going to be the guy that, like, sets up the, you know,
AC,
the twin, yeah, the twin turbo Holley ECU deal. Like, that's just not him. So find what you are passionate about and do it, and do it really good. And I think that there's a better opportunity for success in doing that than doing the whole thing. You know, everybody's doing, there's a lot of, everybody's doing the whole thing. There's a lot of people who aren't any good at it. There's a lot of people who are really good at it. Right. So
and who would those be?
The ones that are really good at it. I think we've had most of them on our podcast.
So yeah, find something unique, whatever it is, you know.
Airbrushing, lobsters. That dude.
I mean, honestly, I like airbrushing, but yeah, maybe, right. Yeah. You know, like, I mean, right. That's probably lobsters is not, it's only going to get you so far.
Right. Paint. I mean, there's so many specific things.
But like wiring, all right? Like, look at Miranda, for example. You know, he, sure, he's building kick ass cars. He's got a thriving business doing that, but he's branched off on the Miranda Marine side. And he's rigging boats like an absolute fucking savage, you know, like just the highest end rigging that is, that's what he's good at. He's has an awesome skill set with that. So he's offering that service and people are just jumping all over it. So find what you're good at. Like, how about the wiring guy, dude? That's like, where are all the guys that are taking these cars that the fabricators are building and Charlie Hutton's painting them and Randy at the paint house is painting them? Where's the guy that can take them from there and say, give me this car, let me wire it like an absolute beast, and I'm going to send it back to you like with an Excel sheet of these are circuits, these are your fuses, this is this, this is that. Take it from there.
There's probably a huge market for that type of stuff because all the shops are so busy that they could use a specialty guy that can come in and, you know, bang out exhaust and headers and killer stuff like that, body and paint, interior. Wiring.
Yeah. So be great at something. Don't just be okay at everything. That's what I'm thinking.
What is the most overlooked part of setting up a chassis?
I think it's not setting up the chassis. I think it's making the chassis work. Because
we're actually trying to.
Well, yeah. Like chassis fabrication is, there's a lot of people doing it, right? And it can get easily, people can get enamored with or smoke showed with just beautiful fabrication. So beautiful fabrication is like a sliver of
it looks really cool until you go down.
Yeah,
the
it looks
road.
Great. It looks great. I mean, it's very important to us. Obviously that's like a focal point for us, but it's the engineering portion of it and it's making the suspension work. It's, I mean, there's so much to it that.
Well, more so from a builder that has builder. The chassis.
Yeah, that's where I was going with mine.
Okay.
We hear from a lot of customers.
Gotcha. Okay.
They're scared to turn knobs on shocks. They're scared to adjust the spring rate. I think you got to get an understanding for what needs to be done and then what the operating ranges are for the suspension. And that's probably the biggest one that we hear is I want it to sit lower. I want it to sit higher. Springs are coil bound. There's no preload. The shocks are maxed out. Shocks are bottomed out. So, yeah, it's a shock and spring setup and putting the car in its proper operating range to make it go down the road the way it should.
Yeah, I mean, call we get calls all the time, and it's first thing, it's where are you set at ride height right now? You know, we send out some very, really detailed instructions of eye to eye at ride height on these chassis is this, this chassis is this. Where are you at ride height? Well, I mean, wherever you send it to me at.
Control arms are level.
Yeah, control arms are level. Yeah. So
that's probably the biggest one is that there's no industry standard of control arms being level, okay? Generally, like from a cosmetic standpoint, ish, in or around level, but that's not just like a look at them and because they're level.
If you put them level, it doesn't magically do something.
Right.
Putting them level doesn't fix whatever else that is going wrong.
I think the best way to describe it is that to look at look at a chassis, you look at shocks and springs, almost like a an EFI motor. There's tuning that needs to be done. You know, it's a base calibration that's in it. There's a shock and spring setup that's in it based on previous builds that we've done. If it's a 1969 Camaro or a 67 Mustang, we have countless vehicles that we've built that we pull all the data from corner weights, various people driving them through, various situations and arrive at a shock and spring package. But when somebody calls up and it's a 59 Buick Invicta, okay, and it's a 409 with a supercharger and it's got subs in it and Carlson did the interior, it's got this and that.
Got to have corner weights.
You've got to have corner weights. So you've got springs on it that are going to get you started and going to get you down the road. And 9 times out of 10, they're going to be pretty much on the money. But that's something that we're there to help with, I think. And just if it doesn't blow you away when you drive it, you should pick up the phone and call our sales team, because your initial, it should be phenomenal. So if there's some shock or spring tuning that needs to be done, it's usually pretty straightforward, pretty easy, because to be surprised at how a 1969 Camaro or something custom can vary.
No, I think you're right on the correlation with the EFI and engine tuning is great, because GM crate motor out of the box, hook it up, wire it, crank it.
It runs.
It will run.
It's okay.
And it'll get you there and all that. And for some people, it's like, holy shit, this is awesome. You know, other people are like, this shift point here sucks. The tip in here sucks. You know, idle this, blah, blah, blah. And you can make it like phenomenal with a little bit of tuning,
yep.
You know, and the same thing goes for the chassis. Awesome. Hey, listener questions are always. Oh,
I had one more that I got texted. Someone hit me up on Instagram.
Who's that?
Speed Freak Garage. I'm going to paraphrase it because it's a little bit long, but I love the podcast. Love the amount of fuckery you guys do between each other. It's absolutely amazing. If you had to make a mixtape for a road tour, what would be the top three songs? Josh, go first. From Florida Georgia Line.
We're not going to get that thing going, because I'm telling you what,
didn't they just break up? Didn't I hear they broke up?
Did they?
I thought there was something.
What is your favorite Florida Georgia Line song? Top three?
Fuck.
Top two.
Florida Georgia Line. All right.
So angry.
Yeah, because they suck. Everybody knows they suck.
Dude, all the music videos have cars and semis.
Me and
cool
Phil
shit.
Were looking at. I've never looked at the guys. As far as I know, Florida Georgia Line, it's just a line. Like, I didn't know there were so there's two guys in the band, right? Me and Phil are looking at it.
Dude, really was confused. It was a line. Yeah. But it was a line.
Well, I don't know a lot about him, right? The one dude looks like he'd whoop your ass.
No,
so I'd be careful. I'd be careful.
I'm not, first of
because
all.
Because if they are breaking up and they're losing, traction, you know, that
might be out there.
The music industry is tough, dude. That can go. You could be up here and just.
They're putting out that type of music. I guarantee fucking to you, they're not listening to this podcast,
dude. They're into cars. I'm gonna get them on here.
They're not. You're gonna get them on here. Yeah. I'll tell them how bad they suck to their face.
You think so?
I'll do it on Zoom.
if you're listening and you have a connection with Florida Georgia Line, somebody out there must set it up,
make it happen.
Because I guarantee you, Josh would be like, so country music, who was your inspiration? Johnny Cash? Do you like Johnny Cash? Hank Williams Jr.?
Yeah, you guys wear you guys wear a lot of cool outfits. Like, where do I get a shirt?
Maybe God, I love those jeans. Those distressed boots are pretty cool.
So do you guys
talk
beforehand
and
like, you know, we need to make this album suck even more than the last album?
I don't
and you
think
like try to
do.
Make the songs that shitty?
Dude, honestly,
your dude gonna get your ass whipped.
Yeah, the one dude is seriously looks like he could.
All right, so
top three songs.
Top three songs for a road trip.
This is how we roll, probably.
What is that?
That's a Florida Georgia Line song.
Oh, I don't even know the Florida Georgia Line songs.
Oh shit, you don't know the names? You just listen to them on repeat.
Is this really the question about Florida Georgia Line?
Well, I
or is
it into that?
Or is it a legitimate question?
If it's a legitimate question, I can give you some actual songs.
I made up the question to segue into Florida Georgia Line.
Oh, okay. I got you. Yeah, well, Florida Georgia Line sucks. And I hope somebody does have a contact and they tell them to listen to me saying how bad they suck. First of all, they're in this to make money. They know they suck. They don't think that their music's any good.
You think so?
They'd probably be like, yeah, dude, you know what? You got to do what you got to do, man. Just trying to make a little living. Sucking shit.
All right, so
I want to see him whoop your ass.
Is there a serious part of the question?
No, that was
it. Oh, the guy legitimately didn't want to know?
Yeah. There was no, not even no guy.
No, the guy was legit.
Oh. So you just completely made that up?
I made up the question to segue into Florida Georgia Line.
Did he have an honest question? So somebody reached out to you via DM, and you used his name, but you just completely made up a question?
Yeah, I made up a question because he was talking shit about Josh liking Florida Georgia Line.
Okay.
Oh, okay.
It's a roundabout way of getting there.
Fuck Florida Georgia Line. I'm going to have a custom shirt made.
I'm telling you.
I'm telling you right now.
Be careful, dude.
That's fine.
Be careful.
I'll take the ass whipping being honest than lie.
Maybe I can get with them on doing jingles.
Dude, I hope it happens. Like, he kicks that door in with his multicolored flannel.
Would that be the highlight of your fucking life?
Oh, my God, dude. I would sit back and I would be like, oh, my God. That would be fucking awesome to see.
Well, if you want to get down into this, who do you think's got a better chance? Me getting my ass whooped by Florida Georgia Line or Bad Chad whooping the shit out of you at SEMA this year?
I think that the altercation.
You played around in the industry. We ain't gonna fuck around with nobody.
Okay. Isn't he from, like, Canada or something?
Yeah, he's in the. Yeah. He's coming to SEMA though with a vendetta.
Are you serious?
Oh, yeah.
He's going to be there.
Posting shit on Instagram. Yeah.
He's got a booth there.
Thanks again for listening to Oil and Whiskey with the Roadster Shop, an Ironclad original. If you like the show, be sure to leave us a rating or review. If you listen to this show, enough of the Florida Georgia Line shit. That's great diversion. Because we haven't talked about Miata once.
Dude, I showed a tremendous amount of respect to Phil because I saw so many windows.
I wanted to talk to Corey LaJoy, see what a real driver thinks.
No, it wasn't a good look for us as a whole. That's why I didn't want to bring it up. Even to shit on Phil, I didn't want to bring it up.
I'm with you.
Yeah, it was just, not the right time. Thanks again to our guest, Corey LaJoy. Maybe we should ask him about Miatas, though.
Maybe we can email him.
Well, I'll send him a text.
All right.
We'll see you again next week.